Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. So much attention recently has been going to the daily assaults on things that we treasure and take for granted. Freedom of the press, public education, even the rule of law. It's right to be concerned about these attacks and take action to defend them. But there is another attack happening under the radar that few people are aware of. A move by right-wingers to convene a constitutional convention and rewrite the Constitution. Once convened, there are no limits on what can be changed, and they are dangerously close to pulling it off. They only need 6 more states to succeed to convene the convention. This is perhaps the greatest threat to our democracy that most people don't know about. One organization that is on top of this threat to our democracy is Common Cause. Here to tell us more about what's happening with this threat of a constitutional convention is Jay Riestenberg, Deputy Communications Director of Common Cause. Jay Riestenberg, welcome to All Together Now.
Thanks, Eleanor. Thanks for having me. Excited to be on.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, we just met in person yesterday for the first time, did a little prep for the show today. I'm wondering if you can just very briefly describe for our listeners, which is almost everybody who hasn't heard about this, describe kind of what is this constitutional convention and why we should care about it.
Sure. So under Article 5 of the U.S. Constitution, there's 2 ways to amend the Constitution. Most people don't know this. They always thought there was only one way, which is the way we've always used to pass an amendment through Congress and then have it ratified by 3/4 of the states. And that's the way we've amended the Constitution 27 times since the Constitution was ratified itself in 1789. The other way that's never been used, so it's completely untested, is to call what you were just mentioning an Article 5 constitutional convention. And that's when 2/3 of state legislatures call for a convention, and then a convention would convene, and anything that came out of that convention would hypothetically have to be ratified by 3/4 of the states. So on the surface, it might sound like a reasonable idea, but there's a reason why it's never been called in the 230-year history of the Constitution. And as you mentioned, one of those reasons is that there are no rules, guidelines, or safeguards in the Constitution on how this convention would work.
Right, exactly. So all we need is to get enough states to call for this constitutional convention, and then once it's convened, there's no limits on what they could talk about. So, for example, many of the state legislators have voted for this constitutional convention, thinking that it would focus on balancing the budget and making sure that Congress would never spend more than the money that it had. But in actual fact, once convened, there's literally no limits to what could be brought up and voted on, right?
That's correct. In fact, there are currently several different Article 5 convention campaigns happening right now on the right in conservative circles. And one you mentioned focuses on the balanced budget amendment, which even if the convention just focused on a balanced budget amendment, I don't think that's a good idea because the balanced budget amendment really is horrific public policy that would lead to a lot of cuts in programs that we all care about, like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. But as you mentioned, the real danger in this is that once a convention is convened, anything can get brought up. And there are groups out there looking to call a convention to literally rewrite how our Constitution works, to give power to the states over the federal government and let the states repeal protections and civil rights and laws that we have fought for and people have died for over the last 150 years.
Yeah, and you know, when I first heard about this, it's just so shocking. I didn't even know that it would be possible to so dramatically rewrite what we've been living on as our Constitution for since the founding of our country. But once this Constitutional Convention gets convened, you know, there's no way to limit or stop what they would do. So, when you talk about the rewrite in the Constitution, that could be things like, one of the things I've heard from the right that they want to do is take away the amendment that says voters will directly elect our U.S. senators, and it will revert back to the original format where the U.S. senators were chosen by the state legislators. And, of course, the right would like that because, the Koch brothers, through their various organizations, and the right wing generally has a lot of influence at the state level. So what are some of the damages? What are some of the changes that you have heard about that the right might do in such a constitutional convention?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth looking at it as kind of a big picture to understand these damages that, the push for a constitutional convention, some groups on the right try to act like it's a grassroots citizen-led push. In reality, this is all being funded by a handful of millionaires and billionaires. And this is really just their net's way of rigging the rules in their favor against the American people. When they talk about calling a convention and they've had some mock conventions where they bring in state legislators and they think they're Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and James Madison and rewriting the Constitution, but, you know, they come up with really egregious ideas like letting 30 state legislatures repeal any federal law or Supreme Court decision. So if you think about that, that more directly puts a threat to Roe v. Wade and a threat to affordable health care, a possible repeal of voting rights for women and people of color and young people. Every constitutional right we have won really since the Civil War and maybe even predating that would be on the table and would be up for grabs. You know, Mark Meckler, who came to be famous from organizing around the Tea Party, started one of these groups called the Convention of States that's pushing for this convention. And he was on Fox News just a couple weeks ago, and he said flat out, my goal here is to repeal 115 years of progressivism in the United States.
That's just stunning to me that he would get up on the air and admit it. I mean, even though it is on Fox News, but he literally said that he wants to unravel 150 years of progressive legislation?
Right. So that's everything from basically the progressive era where we as a nation had to put up new checks and balances to counter the wealth and greediness of the Gilded Age to today. So that goes all the way back to what you were just saying, the direct election of senators and some good government reforms, along with economic reforms and programs that were developed in the Great and the aftermath of the Great Depression and the New Deal to the Great Society, and all the Supreme Court decisions that ended so many bad practices in this country and created more a more equitable country would be on the chopping block.
Yeah, that's very scary. And like you say, you know, they're putting the guys on it to the extent people do know about it. They're trying to pretend it's a grassroots initiative when in fact it's really being pushed by these millionaires and billionaires. I know that Mercer, from the very wealthy Mercer family, who's been involved in a lot of shenanigans, has put, I think, is it $500,000 behind this effort to convene the Constitutional Convention? Is that right?
That's correct. I mean, that's what we know that they put behind. Quite frankly, it could be a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And the Mercers, by the way, are the ones that they've been bankrolling Steve Bannon, who was
right,
the mastermind there with Donald Trump during his campaign and for a while his strategic advisor in the White House. And he's got these crazy right-wing website with all these conspiracy theories. But the Mercer family, for a long time, was big money behind Steve Bannon, which right there shows you their colors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct. And they became very close, like you said, to the Trump White House and the Trump campaign and became huge funders to them as well.
Yeah. Do we know who some of the other funders are? I mean, we know, for example, that Charles Koch is very interested in not only changing the rulers and elected officials, but also changing the rules through voter suppression and gerrymandering and so forth. And do we know if Charles Koch has put money behind this idea of pushing a constitutional convention?
Well, there is a direct connection between Koch money and this push in a couple different ways. You know, the Kochs have previously, Koch link groups have previously given the Convention of States money. That's the group that also received money from the Mercer family. But, mm-hmm. you know, one of the main organizations pushing this is called the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC. And they are a kind of secretive right-wing corporate lobbying group that has very close ties to the Koch brothers and Koch Industries, and the Charles Koch Institute is one and two of their biggest funders. So ALEC has been significant in this Article 5 convention push in getting legislators to believe into it and giving these lobbyists for the convention access to legislators. So whether or not Charles Koch, this is his number one priority, certainly his money and his resources are going to push for this.
Right. And we just had a guest recently on All Together Now, Nancy McLean, author of Democracy in Chains. She has a whole chapter in that wonderful book where she describes this strategist, James Buchanan, who comes out of George Mason University of Virginia, that James Buchanan was a major strategist for Charles Koch and the right wing and all the mischief that they've been up to, but that actually James Buchanan came up with this idea of rewriting constitutions in a way that made sure that elites would be guaranteed to continue to hold power. And he was invited down to Chile when the despot Augusto Pinochet was in charge, and actually helped to write the Chilean constitution that's in effect today, which put in a lot of restrictions and made it hard for progressives, even progressive presidents, once they're in power, to make changes. So they've already succeeded in rewriting the constitution in one country, and I'm concerned they see Chile as a model for what they might be able to pull off here in the United States.
Well, I mean, that's correct. And, you know, I think the real danger with this is the reason why this is more dangerous than just the Koch groups or the right wing going into a state or into Congress and passing a law is once they get a constitutional amendment, it's pretty permanent. It's very hard to overturn a constitutional amendment. We've only done it a few times in our history, and it takes generations. So this is how they, the wealthy donor class, really embed their kind of radical 1% agenda into our Constitution forever, until we're somehow find a way to repeal it.
Right, exactly. And that's what happened in Chile. The people elected a wonderful woman as president, Michelle Bachelet, who came in and wanted to put in all kinds of programs to help the people. And she found that she got stymied because of the way the Constitution was written, and that the worst part of it all was they had made it very hard to change it back. So it's extremely difficult. You know, one of the things they can put in the Constitution is making it harder to make any future changes to the Constitution. So undoing the damage could be nearly impossible.
Right, right. And our Constitution is already pretty hard to change.
Yeah. So pretty much if you care about anything like, you know, one person, one vote, if you care about freedom of the press, if you care about electing our U.S. senators, if you care about women having the right to vote, if you care about gay marriage, you know, really pretty much any issue that you care about is in jeopardy once this constitutional convention gets convened, and because of the lack of rules and no limits, right?
That's correct. I mean, and I think it even goes farther than that. If you think about the programs and laws and safeguards we created over the last 50-100 years, we're talking about clean water and clean air, which obviously is still a huge issue in a lot of communities across the country, but we have made improvements. And the role of these special interests that want to call this convention is they want to get rid of that stuff. They see that as too much government. They see that as too much intervention, where I see that as our people coming together to protect ourselves and protect our country and make our country better. And so we don't want to go backwards. We want to go forward, and the folks behind this convention push want to take us backwards.
Exactly. And what's very scary to me is, you know, first of all, that this is at all ever possible is a scary thought. But what's even more scary to me is how close they already are to being able to convene this constitutional convention. How many states do they need in order to convene this convention?
Yeah, so the Constitution says you need two-thirds of state legislatures to call a convention.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much all it says. Now, there's a little bit of disagreement on what that actually means. Do you need two-thirds of state legislatures to call a convention for one specific issue, or can you combine different convention calls? But, you know, there are a lot of people who just think that it's on one specific issue. So if we use that as a frame point, right now, there are 28 states that have passed resolutions calling for an Article 5 convention for a balanced budget amendment. And so when you only need two-thirds of the states to call a convention, which is 34, that means the folks behind this balanced budget amendment push are only six states away from reaching the 34-state goal, which is, like you said, very scary and very dangerous. And you know, we could only be a year or two away from this actually happening. And a lot of people kind of look at me crazy when I say that. Mm-hmm. But we also have to remember, you know, Donald Trump's president, and a Supreme Court seat was held up for a year because of political obstruction. You know, crazy things have happened in American politics in the last few years, and we shouldn't throw out the idea that a constitutional convention is impossible in our current political environment.
Not at all. In fact, it's a very real possibility. That's what deeply concerns me. So they only need 34 states. They have 28 states have already passed a resolution for constitutional convention focused on a balanced budget. So they only need six more states, and there are six more states that are completely controlled by Republicans in the state. That means the Republicans have majorities in both the House and the Senate. So, you know, getting those six more states is totally within reach, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, those six states are South Carolina, Virginia, Kentucky, Minnesota, Montana, and Idaho. And so, you know, if they could get their resolution passed in those six states, they would have a good argument of it's time to call an Article 5 convention. Luckily, what we've seen is both Democratic and Republican legislators really starting to oppose this idea because they don't want to see you know, these special interest groups that are not from their state kind of come in and try to rewrite our Constitution. So, believe it or not, we actually have seen a lot of Republicans, you know, disagree with this idea and actually vote against it. Now, that doesn't mean we're out of the woodworks, and it certainly doesn't mean the threat isn't real, because legislators and politicians change their minds and anything is possible, but we have seen a lot of good bipartisan opposition.
Yeah, so let's talk about the good news here and the strategy of how we oppose this. How do we stop this move to rewrite the Constitution? I really appreciate the great work that you're doing there at Common Cause. And describe for our listeners, who are some of the people that are aware of this threat and taking action to help save the Constitution?
Yeah, we have a great partner in a group called the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities. And on the state level, there's all kinds of groups that are involved. It's the ACLU, it's the Common Cause chapter, it is the League of Women Voters chapter. And, you know, it differs from each state. There are different groups in each state that get involved in this. We've seen Planned Parenthood and the Sierra Club and others who see this and really realize the threat. So we welcome every voice to the table to convince legislators and the general public on why this is a bad idea.
Fantastic. And the new network that seems to have a lot of energy these days is Indivisible, and they're aware of this also, aren't they?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of the local Indivisible chapters get involved, and actually in Kentucky 2 years ago, the local Indivisible chapter was very influential in helping stop an Article 5 convention resolution pass in a legislative committee. So the new kind of renewed activism since Trump's election on the left has really seen this, because they already see the threats to constitutional rights that the Trump administration poses, and they realize that a constitutional convention under Donald Trump, or really any constitutional convention, would be just absolutely disastrous. So we've seen a lot of that energy flow into this campaign in the states.
Yeah, well, thank God for that, and thanks to the activists and the groups who are helping to organize them, and, you know, Common Cause and Indivisible. So that's what's happening kind of with the liberal groups. What's going on? You mentioned that even some of the right-wing groups don't really like the idea of a constitutional convention. What is it that they don't like about it?
Yeah, there are some groups on the right that oppose this idea, and they come at it as they see a threat to the Second Amendment, or, you know, they're more originalist and don't want anyone rewriting or messing up the original Constitution. So that is kind of interesting to watch the divide on the right of kind of people who want to open up the Constitution to all kinds of bad changes, and the people who want to just kind of keep it as is and make sure there's not any changes at all. And so, yeah, and I think they have been convincing Republican legislators on why this is dangerous.
Yeah, well, that's encouraging. I think it's one of those rare places where we might get some left-wing and right-wing cooperation to help defend America here.
Right.
So what's the strategy? Like, I heard about this and was deeply concerned about it. Really, it could be like the biggest threat to America that very few people know about. What's the strategy for how do we stop this runaway convention, this constitutional convention that could rewrite the very rules by which our country is run?
Yeah, that's a great question. Really, what Common Cause and our partners have focused on is not only educating legislators and stopping these Article 5 resolutions where they come up in the states, but also looking at states that currently have an Article 5 convention call on the books and convincing legislators to rescind or repeal those. And we have actually done that in four states in the last few years, in Maryland, Delaware, New Mexico, and Nevada. And so all four of those state legislatures actually repealed it, and almost in every state it was repealed with bipartisan support. And had we not done that, we would be at 32 states, just two states away from calling an Article 5 convention. So that's really scary to think about, that if we didn't rescind in those four states, how close we would be, even closer. And so going into the next legislative sessions in 2019, we're looking at states like Colorado and Nebraska and New Hampshire and others as possible states we could convince legislators to repeal and rescind their old Article 5 convention calls.
Fantastic. And so it looks like the strategy, you know, you got a two-pronged strategy. One is stop any more states from calling for this constitutional convention. And then secondly, rescind the call to convention in states that have already passed it. So thank God you stopped those four. You know, I mean, you got those four states to rescind. I mean, the idea to be two states away when the Republicans control six states is just terrifying.
Yeah, that's right. It is very scary.
Yeah, so it's good. Well, I'm glad we have a chance for our listeners to learn about both this danger and about the great work you're doing in Common Cause to try and save our democracy. It's like this whole underground battle is happening that I would say probably 99% of people never heard about.
Yeah, you know, that's right. And the secrecy or the kind of under-the-radar strategy is the right strategy here. They don't want people to know about this because when people figure this out and hear about this, they get enraged and they call their legislator and they convince their legislators to vote no. So the whole right-wing strategy was to keep this under the radar and not talk about it and not make it public. So when we're able to go on radio shows like yours and talk about this and educate listeners and get our activists involved, it really makes just a huge difference. And that's how we've been able to beat back some of these efforts.
Fantastic. And I'm so happy you're on the show so our listeners can know about it. I can learn more about it. And I'd love to see if we could get you or a representative from the initiative on to, you know, Rachel Maddow and some of the other news outlets and just keep spreading the word. And what exactly can our listeners do about this? You mentioned, you know, is it call your state legislator and warn them that this is happening? And, you know, I guess, is there a way that the listeners can find out if their state has passed this or not? How do they do that?
Yeah, the best thing they could do is actually go to commoncause.org, and they can get involved in Common Cause and actually join our kind of activist team that works on this issue. And we have all the information under our Article 5 page on what states are targets and what states have already passed it. And if you just sign up at Common Cause, you'll be sure to be, and you can kind of put in what your interest is, and we'll be sure to reach out to you and get you involved in the local campaigns that are happening.
Fantastic. And I think that's really important. And you have written a wonderful, it's the best I've seen, a wonderful briefing paper on this whole threat to our democracy, on the Article 5 Constitutional Convention. Is that available on your website?
It is available on our website. In fact, if you go to dangerouspath.org, that's our Article 5 convention page, and you can sign up there and you can find that resource and some other things on that web page.
Yeah, good. Well, I encourage all our listeners, please go to the Common Cause website, look at that briefing about the Article 5 Constitutional Convention and read it. It's very to the point. It's very well written. It's very clear. It gives you a map and it shows you which states have already had passed the resolution to call for a constitutional convention. As Jay mentioned, it's 28 states already passed it, and you can see exactly where they are. So that'll help you know. And then now you're saying there's a way people can join the team to get involved locally. Like, if you're in a state that has passed it, you can work to rescind it. And if you're in a vote that has not passed it, you can inform your legislators to make sure that it doesn't happen in your state.
Right. Absolutely.
Great. And meanwhile, you'll meet some wonderful people if you get involved there at the state level. So, well, that's all very encouraging. And is there anything else you wanted to tell our listeners about this constitutional convention?
Well, I could tell your listeners all kinds of things about it. But, you know, I just want to underscore how important this is that, you know, I catch myself doing this too, but it's very easy in the day-to-day chaos out of the Trump administration and out of Congress to kind of get worried about that and get lost in those hiccups or issues, and they're not hiccups. They're huge issues and have long-term damaging effects to our country. But it is worth remembering how much is on the line with these bigger issues like this call for an Article 5 convention. And, you know, even the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh and the damage more conservative Supreme Court may do to our country, the damage an Article 5 convention could do that is controlled by special interest is just hundreds of times worse. So it's important to remember that and to kind of put that in perspective with everything else happening in the country right now.
You're exactly right. And I know I've talked to quite a number of people about this threat of a constitutional convention, and nobody that I spoke to had heard of it. That's not true. One person had heard about it, and it was Bob Cutner, who was on this show just 1 week ago, had heard about it, but almost nobody has even heard about it. And their immediate reaction is, well, this is such a big deal that if it really were a threat, I would have heard about it somewhere, because it would have showed up in the newspaper, it would have come on the TV news, that if it's passed all these states, there would have been some coverage by the Associated Press or someone saying, well, we now have 28 of the 34 states needed. But none of that has happened. And so people are shocked. And I go, well, look, this is real. And I send them your briefing paper from Common Cause, a very reputable national organization with a great history and legacy of defending our democracy. And they look at it and they went, oh my God, this is really scary. It's like, but I said, you know, the right wing wants to pass this. They won't pass it. They won't get away with it if more people know about it. So they're trying to go stealth. They're trying to go under the radar. They're trying not to get attention. So when they do pass a resolution in a state to call for the Constitutional Convention, they're not organizing any press conferences to and broadcast that they've just done this. They're trying to do it and get to the magic number of the states they need to actually convene, so they do it before people know what hit them.
Right. That's absolutely right.
Yeah, so I thank you for everything you're doing there with your wonderful briefing paper and your groups. And I encourage our listeners, you know, so much of the attention media-wise has just been totally focused on Donald Trump and the White House and the daily assault and shenanigans and craziness and things that he's been doing, that it's just like so dominated the political news that it's given a lot of cover for this kind of a thing to be going under the radar, and the convention could come and go before we even know that it's been happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true. I mean, like you said, and that is all part of their strategy. They don't want people to know about it.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about this practice session that they had. I believe it was in 2016 that the right wing actually convened a practice, like a mock convention, to practice how it would work. Tell us some about what they did with that.
Well, yeah, I mean, they brought in the Convention of States group. You know, they actually paid for a lot of these legislators to go to Arizona, and they've had a few of them. They had one in Virginia and one in Arizona. But basically, they kind of sit around in a room and pretend that they're in a real convention and talk about amendments that they want to make to a convention, which, you know, talking about changing the Constitution and having that discussion is absolutely necessary and something we should do. But the way they're doing it is just so egregious in wanting to call this Article 5 convention without any rules or limits, and would certainly threaten a lot of the things we care about. And some of the things that came out of that mock convention as ideas on how to change the Constitution are really scary. You know, we talked about how they want to let states repeal federal laws and all really kind of change the whole idea of federalism and weaken the power and scope of the federal government to a point where, you know, we as a nation are just 50 different states and we really don't have a federal government anymore. So it really is a dangerous idea, and the folks behind it are really dangerous in themselves. But, you know, it was also interesting to see the lack of diversity at this mock conventions and how it was dominated by older white men. And so if these mock conventions are anything like how the real one will be, you know, we're not going to have a lot of women or people of color or young people in there. And it's going to be just a completely one-sided patriarchy deciding how we want to change the Constitution, which is not how we need to do it in 21st century America. We need all voices and all people to be lending their ideas on how we need to change the Constitution and make it better.
Yeah, well, and let's, to the extent we do need any changes in the Constitution, like maybe get rid of the Electoral College, for example, but to the extent there are legitimate changes that need to be made, they should be done the way we've done them since the founding of the country, is, you know, through Congress with some ratification. There it's for a very strict and narrow purpose, not this kind of constitutional convention, which is wide open and could be hijacked for any right-wing agenda.
Right. And, you know, there are certainly, like you said, things we need to change in the Constitution, getting rid of the Electoral College, maybe looking at how the U.S. Senate is made up and how undemocratic that is, and maybe redefining what the Supreme Court does and the limits on the Supreme Court and their terms. Certainly a lot of good ideas on how to change the Constitution, but like you said, we need to do it the way we've always done in this country, and that's to pass it through Congress first and then send it out to ratify by the states. And I am not naive enough to believe that Congress is going to pass, this Congress at least, is going to pass good constitutional amendments, and so certainly we need to change who sits in Congress and how they prioritize, what they prioritize in order to get some of these amendments. But, you know, I kind of go back to the idea that if something's broken in your house, the way you fix it is not by lighting your house on fire, which is kind of what these folks who want to call a convention want to do. You know, they see government as broken, Congress is gridlocked and not doing anything and not meeting the people's needs, so they want to call a convention and put everything up for grabs. That is not the right way to make change.
Right, I agree with you. That's a great image. You know, if something is broken in the house, fix what's broken. You know, if the door doesn't close, fix the door so it closes. You know, don't set the house on fire. I love that analogy. And is there a website that you know of or a book from the right wing of the people who are pushing this that we could read to learn more about what is the thinking behind this and what is the plan by the right wing? Like, have they published a book on this that we could read and learn more about their plans?
They haven't really published a book, and, you know, they do this quietly because they don't want people to know it. So it's actually quite the opposite. They haven't published much because they don't want anyone to know their plan, if that makes sense.
Right, absolutely. Well, that fits with their stealth strategy. But I remember when I learned that they've done this practice convention already in 2016, I was like, holy Toledo, these guys are incredibly well organized. They've got a plan in place. They've had a practice convention. They're like on the football field. They're practicing for the Super Bowl, and our team doesn't even know there's a game being played, so we're not on the field.
Right? Yeah.
We got to get on the field, folks. We got to be aware this is happening and block this constitutional convention.
That's right.
So this underscores a couple of things. One, yes, it's important for everybody to vote this November 6th. You know, vote for your members of Congress, vote for your state legislators. I mean, how important are the state legislators in this? Because this is kind of an attack through the states. But also, it shows like the right wing is working at every level to try and expand the power of the right. And you mentioned this group, ALEC, which is kind of a front group for the corporate money and the right wing. Tell us a little bit about what ALEC is and what they do.
Yeah, so ALEC really exists to bring corporate lobbyists and state legislators kind of behind closed doors to create model bills. So, you know, no one really knew about ALEC until around 2011 when the Center for Media Democracy launched what's called ALECExposed.org, and Common Cause filed a whistleblower complaint. A whistleblower came to us and gave us a lot of documents that charged ALEC with tax fraud, because although they are, what they exist to do is lobby for legislation backed by their corporate sponsors, they're actually registered with the IRS as a charity. So all the corporations that give money to ALEC are able to get a tax write-off for their donations to ALEC, which is just really egregious and kind of crazy. But, you know, ALEC has known for a lot of different, they over the years worked on a lot of different policies. They were the group behind spreading voter ID in so many different states, which obviously disenfranchises and makes it harder to vote for so many Americans. They were the group behind pushing the Stand Your Ground laws, which kind of came into light after the killing of Trayvon Martin.
Mm-hmm.
They had been the group pushing and passing so-called right-to-work laws and anti-union and anti-worker laws around the country. They've done a lot of work on denying the science of climate change and getting environmental regulations and protections repealed at the state level. So, I mean, you can probably name the issue, and ALEC has had some influence over it over the years.
Right, and including shifting taxes from the wealthy and big business to more to the middle class and lower income people.
Right.
So, yeah, pretty much anything you care about, ALEC is on the wrong side of the issue, and that's another group. It's backed by the millionaires and billionaires. Who's behind ALEC?
So ALEC gets almost all of its funding either from private corporations that are members of ALEC and help kind of push policy inside of ALEC, or, you know, conservative foundations from the handful of really conservative donors like the Coates and those folks. But, you know, the companies that are in ALEC include like AT&T and Comcast and Chevron a bunch of other companies. And one of the things the groups who have been working against ALEC have done over the last few years is actually get companies to leave ALEC over different controversies. And over the years, we have successfully got over 100 major companies to leave ALEC, including big ones like Walmart and Google and ExxonMobil and Coca-Cola and, you know, there's hundreds of them. So we have had real success there in holding ALEC corporate funders accountable and really weakening the power of ALEC when their big corporate sponsors leave.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, that's another one where it's really helpful to have you and Common Cause and some of the other groups kind of blowing the whistle, blowing the cover on a group like ALEC, which pretends to be kind of a straight, nonpartisan policy group, when in fact they're just, you know, a front for big money, a right-wing big money. And so good for you for blowing the cover and letting people know who is actually behind ALEC and that they're pushing a very extreme right-wing agenda. So I'm curious about this suit. You mentioned someone brought a suit saying they claim to be kind of educational, but truly they lobby and they're pushing legislation. That's really kind of the main thing they do. What happened with that lawsuit? It would seem to me they should not be allowed to be registered as a charity when they do so much work on lobbying.
Yeah, you know, because it was an IRS whistleblower complaint, The IRS was required to review it, but it's a secret process, and so it was filed in 2012. And we actually don't know where it is now. We know it hasn't been dismissed, and we know that the IRS probably has taken some action with Alec, because Alec's somewhat changed the way they do business, but mostly do it the same exact way, and we believe are still in violation of tax law. But we actually don't know the status of the suit. We know it's ongoing. As far as we know, it's ongoing. But that doesn't stop the problem is the corporations are still able to get that tax benefit, and Alec is still basically violating the law.
Yeah, so here's Alec out there pushing the extreme wealthy right-wing agenda, and the people who contribute to it get a tax benefit to boot. I mean, it's really, you know, how many ways are these guys causing trouble? So can our listeners learn more about Alec from your website, or how do they learn more about Alec and what they're up to?
Yeah, there's a whole webpage on our website about Alec. So I would encourage them to go to, or encourage you all to go to commoncause.org, but also check out alecexposed.org and the Center for Media and Democracy, which has done some really great investigative work and published a lot of stuff about Alec.
Yeah, that's great. And then meanwhile, so we're not always on the defensive, there used to be kind of a progressive group, a state and local alternative policy group many years ago that started, and but unfortunately they folded, but they did a similar thing of looking at model legislation and supporting state legislators to pass good progressive legislation. Who's filling that space now, do you think, in a good way from the progressive point of view, what proactively we want passed at the state level?
Well, you know, I think the progressive side is kind of organized differently. We're much more bottom up, and so we have activists that are kind of telling us what to do. Where Alec and the right wing is very much top down and kind of pushed their donors' agenda. So it was always kind of hard to think about how an alternative to Alec would be structured. But there are a lot of great groups. I mean, all the progressive interest groups obviously have different pieces of legislation and sample policies that they push. And there's groups out there like the State Innovation Exchange, which works with progressive legislators and helps push progressive policies in the state legislatures that are really doing a great job. And you can see that in a lot of the progressive Democratic-controlled legislatures and what's coming out of there, from, you know, raising the wage to environmental protections to campaign finance reform and expanding voting rights to what's going to be on the ballot. You know, there's a lot of great progressive issues that are going to be on the ballot in 2018 and hopefully win in ballot initiatives in states. So I feel really actually hopeful about what's happening at the local and state level in a lot of cities and states that are moving progressive reforms.
Yeah, that's encouraging. And as you mentioned, the move that you've been involved with to get corporations to stop funding Alec, you know, you've got over 100 of those companies now saying, all right, we didn't realize Alec was so unpopular with so many of our customers, so we're now going to stop supporting Alec. So I think that's another kind of a direct way people can be engaged. As my understanding is, there's still some major corporations like Anheuser-Busch, UPS, AT&T, Comcast, and Verizon. They're all still supporting Alec, right? And if they are, we shouldn't be their customers, and we should leave and tell them why we're leaving.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, if you see a member or a corporation that is funding Alec, you should definitely contact that company, tell them why it's a bad idea for them to be part of Alec and is actually not in line with their corporate policies, because a lot of these corporations have, you know, friendly or good environmental policies or policies on race that ALEC's agenda and ALEC's speakers actually tend to go against. And, you know, ALEC pushes a very anti-climate science agenda and so on. But, you know, you mentioned Verizon. Verizon actually just recently left ALEC over some controversy that from a speaker at ALEC's conference who said a lot of racist and white supremacist stuff. So we have...
Oh, that's wonderful news.
We've seen companies, you know, really leave ALEC when it's made apparent to them that ALEC and that company's values are not the same.
Fantastic. Well, and our listeners can learn more about that both at alecexposed.org and also the commoncause.org website. So, Jay, you are in the middle of helping to save America here, and I so appreciate all that you're working on. And how did you get involved in this line of work?
You know, I came to Common Cause about 5 years ago because I really like the work Common Cause is doing. And coming to work every day and working to not only save what we have of democracy, but also looking at ways to expand democracy and build it to be more representative is just a passion of mine. So while I work a lot and it's a lot of work and can be really stressful because you realize the stakes that are at the table, I also really enjoy it. And, you know, I would say the listeners who are listening and going to websites and taking action and showing up at rallies and you for having folks on your channel, I mean, we're all part of this together to keep our country afloat while we have a Donald Trump in the White House and this constitutional convention threat and all this money running around our politics and trying to control the system. I mean, eventually things have to change, so we're getting there step by step.
Right, exactly. And Common Cause has done so much great work over the years, and one of the most important things is calling for transparency. So at least if the big money is backing a particular initiative, we know who's behind it. That it's a little bit worrisome with this constitutional convention, to go back to that for a minute. It's just we don't really know all the big money. We know the Mercers gave at least $500,000. It could be more. It could be Charles Koch and his whole network of millionaires and billionaires. This is exactly the kind of thing that they've been on for years, and particularly, you know, from that whole experience of rewriting the Chile Constitution. But do we know even really who's funding it? How do we find out who's backing this constitutional convention push?
You know, we don't have a lot of information on who's funding it. We, from what we do know, it's clearly just a handful of wealthy donors. In fact, one of the convention's groups, the Convention of States that we kind of talked about, you know, about one-fourth of their funding last year, about $2 million or $1.5 million, came just from one donor or one person. So clearly, this is an effort pushed by just a few wealthy individuals that want to kind of rid the rules, like I said, against the American voters to further empower themselves. But we're working on stopping it because we can't let this country move further in that direction.
Right, I so appreciate that you are. And we're ready to wrap now. Did you have any final comment you wanted to share with our listeners?
I don't think so. Just please keep getting involved and show up to vote. And just as important as voting is showing up during the legislative sessions and during the congressional sessions and calling your state representatives and calling your members of Congress, you know, I don't want people to go vote and, you know, the blue wave or whatever, we have a wave election and we have more progressives or better people elected. I don't want that to be the end goal. People still have to be involved in 2019 and hold our elected officials accountable regardless of what party they are.
Absolutely. That's all the time we have. Jay Riestenberg, thank you so much for being with us today and for your great work to help save American democracy.
Thank you for having me.
In case you've missed any of these programs, they're available in the archives. If you want to learn more about Breakthrough Solutions, go to thebreakthroughway.com. If you like this program, please go to iTunes and like it there. Our theme song is Let's Give Them Something to Talk About, sung by Bonnie Raitt. I'll be back next Thursday. Thanks for joining us. This is Eleanor LaCane with All Together Now.